June 24th, Koinonia at 8:30. Paul Hain is the moderator. He has invited all teenagers, 19 and under, to a discussion. Paul plans not to talk himself, but to put to the teenagers some questions for them to speak about. He has asked all those over 19 to sit in the balcony of Koinonia if they wish to hear the proceedings.
This session tonight was mainly my idea because I'm really curious. I'm curious about what people sitting on the ground floor think. I don't want to kid you. I am not convinced that youth is all wise, and I'm not a member of the youth cult. Frankly, I think that the smartest people are about 36. I'm terribly impressed with something that's been going on in the last 5, 10 years especially. A lot of people, 36, whom I respect, have been saying that. Well, let me summarize all. Let me focus on Marshall McLuhan. Big stuff these days. I have three of his books here. Impressive. Marshall McLuhan, who's written The Medium as the Massage and Understanding Media and the Gutenberg Galaxy, and has been featured in Lifetime, Look, and the whole pamphlet, says that we, over 30, we who grew up before the age of television, have been conditioned by print technology. Whatever that means. It means, among other things, that we have learned to see the world as fragmented. We approach things one at a time. We divide everything into parts. We pigeonhole. We become specialists. Whereas young people who have grown up in the age of television have learned to see things, as he puts it, mythically and in depth. That's a lot better. Without worrying about what he means by fragmented and print technology and mythically and in depth, I want to find out what you people are that I'm not. What you know that I don't. What you think about a lot of things that are going on. Because according to McLuhan and many other perceptive students of contemporary culture, youth, I'm not quite sure how young you have to be youth, but those who were born after World War II, who don't remember World War II, seem to classify pretty much as you. You seem to know something, but we don't. I'd like to just start off by asking you some questions, and anybody wants to answer who's 19 or under may. And you go on until you're tired of it, and if you get into anything else, it's sort of your discussion. But if you stop on any question, or you don't think it's worth it, I'll ask some other questions. But I'd like to start off with this question. What kind of people do you dislike?
Phonies.
What's a phony?
Maybe somebody that you see acting two different ways, two different times, like maybe in church or around church people. He'll be acting very pious, very goody goody. And then he'll get with a circle of his own friends, and you see him acting completely the opposite. Completely opposite of around church people. He sort of changes with the group that he's with. And then,
if you agree or disagree with any instead, go ahead and indicate. I'm trying to get a feeling of how you feel.
Grace, I'm just wondering, when you're saying he's a phony, I'm not saying anything about people I dislike right now, but do you suppose they adapt themselves to it? Are they really, are you talking about when they really change?
I mean really change. I think, you know, it's a mark of a mature person to stay the same no matter what the circumstance. I mean, he'll adjust, and he'll react to a different situation in a way that's characteristic to himself. He won't be changing completely. Am I making myself clear? No. Let's see. You do, it's good. He'll have a pattern of behavior that'll be consistent. Do you understand? You'll be able to see some kind of pattern in his behavior in different situations. You understand that? Instead of when he's in church, he'll react the same way with the people there as he will with his school friends, with his adult friends, you know, little children. Instead of the person that'll be with church friends, be very, very, everybody kind of reserved and gets an altar and, you know, all this stuff. And then when he goes with his friends, he'll, you know, start swearing and kind of,
I think I know what you mean, but you have to be flexible. I mean, this is one of the mark of distinction of a well-educated, well-rounded individual, that he can react to a situation involving a different person, and he can fulfill, at least attempt to fulfill, this person's needs by reacting to him in a different way in which he would react to someone else that needed a different way of handling.
Okay, how about if it involves maybe even stating different ideas? I mean, maybe stand up for one kind of belief
to
a certain type of people and then stand up for a different
belief. Well, that's just, he's just an out-and-out liar
there.
It's not actually funny. It's just, you know.
Don't raise your hand. Just jump in.
What is it you dislike about him?
I can't see it.
Is ever changing that?
Yeah. I think it's, it's kind of immature to just be fitting in with the people. You know, fitting in to be in.
You dislike his immaturity? How can you dislike his immaturity?
I don't like the inconsistency. Just to be in and to be accepted. You know, I don't think you really have to change if you're not good enough to be accepted in one circle where you are in another.
But can you accept him for what he is?
What?
Can you accept him for what he is? Maybe that's his bad, you know? Maybe you can't. Maybe he's very incompetent or something.
How many of you can describe a phony you have known? I mean, somebody you really know. Describe him. Let's get one out here sort of in the open. Try to avoid present company.
How about a college administrator that would profess one ideal to the students at his college, and then when it comes down to actual policy making and enforcing?
Be specific.
Well, there's too many holy people around here.
Well, as long as the person isn't here. Don't mention names. I mean,
I'm trying to be, in a specific example.
Yeah.
Well, like,
what would they say? You say
Well, this administrator would profess to be, you know, fully on the side of the students and trying to identify with the students and making a great show of trying to have a student following. You know, like a fan club, so to speak, among the students, a hardcore of students that when he walks into the cage, you know, the coffee house at St. Olaf, you know, he expects a certain amount of these people to come up and engage in, you know, intelligent conversation with him, be very friendly with them. But then when it comes down to voting at committee meetings and faculty meetings and actually creating school policy that the majority of the students feel would benefit the student body. In many cases, after hearing the opinions of these students through this identification, he votes against it. He would vote against what he has found out to be the students' wishes of the overall student body. This type of hypocrite, I think, is probably disliked universally, particularly at St. Olaf.
What about some of you who were in high school? What kind of you? Maybe you don't dislike phonies. Is she the only one who feels badly about phonies?
Laura catching the ride. I'm sure Earl must have. No, he didn't like phonies. Well, what kind of person, you know, didn't he like? You've all known people like when people.
Robert, you run into any phonies?
No.
Where'd you come from? We're all
poets. I wanted him here.
Yeah, he did too.
Most of you're sitting around here looking as if you like most people.
I'm going to go to the school, but I She stood up next to me and carried on these conversations and acted like she was really intelligent.
Talk a little bit louder.
She used to put on this bit that she was really intelligent and deep and all this stuff, and it was really a drag because after about 3 times talking to her, you knew that she was just a big and then to find out this is kind of disappointing.
Yeah, especially someone you really admire. You know, it really hurts. So you really admire and find out that this is not because this is very depressing feminine. Like Colin Caulfield and Catching Mice. You just sort of look on that if you happen to be trying to behave like you. Yeah, it's kind of sad.
There was one specific example in the Catcher in the Rye where about the only guy he really respected was a professor, a teacher at a boarding school he had been at. And he came back to New York with a lot of trouble. He flunked out of several schools. He just didn't feel like he could turn anywhere. And he went to this gentleman's apartment and had coffee with this man and his wife, and the guy let him sleep in the living room. And it turned out that this guy was homosexual and made advances to him when he was a guest in their home. And this really shook him very deeply. This is the type of person, you know, you get to know him and think he's really a good man, and then he does something to completely shoot down your whole theory.
Well, maybe it's just like you have for him. I can't generalize or anything, but being specific, it might be something in yourself that you're doing that may be phony, and that's why you dislike him. That's why you feel aversive. I kind of enjoy Paul. Who's my ego? But I have a pony. I know a pony. I have one. No, I know a guy who's in the mail room at WCOTV in Minneapolis. He's around the state in Minnesota. He's a man from WCCO. Big movie star from Minneapolis. When he's out of state, he has himself paged at airports saying, Bruce Herrmann of CBS. And then everybody's supposed to run him. But I mean, I think most phonies are so easy to see through that, I don't know, you kind of laugh most of the time. And he's one of my best friends.
Some of you are in high school yet. I want to ask specifically, what do you dislike in a teacher?
When they tell you to do something, but they don't do it.
Like what?
Like one of our teachers.
Waste the board.
She will tell us not to go. Every day she will. This is every day. And she said for us not to cuss and stuff like that. But she cusses more than any teacher I know.
I think if you listen out of the teacher puts himself on a pedestal and says, look up at me, I have a lot more years of experience and I really don't value your opinion at all. So just don't give it to me.
Kind of teaches that they just decide that their way of doing things is just absolutely perfect and they refuse to change. Year after year after year, they keep the same way of doing things and they won't change. And you can try, you start arguing a point with them and you really feel that you've got basis for your, and they say, shut up, I'm right and you're wrong. Just shut up. And that really gets me.
You don't seem to be wrong at all. Well,
those are the kind of things you can't stand.
I don't like a teacher who doesn't like teaching. You know, you go into a class and maybe you don't really want to take that class, but you're required to. And then you find out that the teacher doesn't even want to teach you. Because he gets up there and says, well, what do you want to do today, you know? He doesn't have a lecture prepared, has you write a paper so that he doesn't have to talk to you. And when the teacher doesn't enjoy, how are you ever going to enjoy it?
I don't think that's true. I walked into, well, my world history class. It was a funny thing. I walk in there and we sit down and she goes, well, what do you want to study this year, you know? And somebody said, well, world history. She says, well, I've never taught it before. What do you want to do? So a kid said, well, let's throw out the book. She said, okay, throw out the book. Now what? And he goes, well, let's just go on our own, you know. Oh, yeah, fine. Let's go to the library and be on our own and do what we want to do, you know. We can study what we want and you can just be there if we have any questions. Oh, sure, fine. You want to go to the library now? I want to learn something from a class. And I mean, some kids will do it. Some kids would have gone in here, you know, done research and other things, but it couldn't have lasted very, very long. I mean, you know, so get out.
Well, I think in order to respond to people like that, you don't need to.
Are you?
No, I don't know. But I mean, I don't know what it would take. You'd have to first of all have an interest in whatever you want to talk about. I think that the students interested in school would be able to get a lot more out of it. Personally, it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I would have enjoyed it, but I don't think I mean she wasn't organized, and I like somebody who, you know, had in the class that, I mean, the kids that were in the class, I don't think were able to handle it. And I wanted to be able to discuss things with them and learn through them, too, because you can't just go to an encyclopedia and, you know, learn all about world history.
I remember Joan went from one extreme to the other because she dropped out of that class and came to mine, where we had started with a lady who I'm sure was there before school was. And anyway, she... This is another thing that bothers me. I wouldn't have liked the ones she had. I heard about her too. This lady went strictly by the books, and every day it was the same thing. You just had a discussion right out of the books. You had to take notes or something like that. But I like it when teachers can modernize or, you know, adapt to the change. And this teacher didn't seem to. You know, it was a rough year. But either way, I don't think I would have liked it. But her teacher was the one that she ended up with, the one that I had all year. But what I'm saying is, I don't like people who can't adapt to modern theater, you know, the times, and there's many of the people around, I think. It seems that a lot of people are this way.
Another thing I don't like is, like, teachers that I'll pick really favorites. I mean, somebody that can take a test in 10 minutes, like, while I was in a drama class, and every single thing that this girl handed in, she got an A on. I mean, you know, and other kids who just worked their heads off. And I mean, it was not that hers was so much better than anybody else's, but just because, you know, I like it.
You sound, I'm surprised, you sound very young. Very much like me. not like all of us were over 30.
How about under 20? 20
and over 30. Some of you were talking about people who can't adapt. Do you think that the world has changed in the last 10 or 20 years, that people who are over 30 don't really understand what's happening and have to do a lot of adapting?
Thirty's kind of a bad age.
When I
say over 50,
you can. Don't trust anybody over 30.
Well,
50. All right.
Individuals that are over 50, I think they have. It was just so long ago that even if they did engage in some of the things that they're putting their nose up about now, they either won't admit it to themselves because of the news coverage it's getting today, or they just don't want to remember it. But I think the people over 30 can readily, you know, identify with a lot of the things that are going on today. And it's funny, I happened to overhear a conversation between my parents and close friends of theirs that went to college together. And, you know, it was just like a bull session about you know, about the good times they had. And the things they did were very similar to the things that were going on today in college. In fact, identical. And they're over 50.
The people I know over 30, like see my parents who around 40 and all my parents' friends who are around the age of 40, they all are up to the times. As far as I know, I don't know many individuals of that age who are way behind.
Well, just as a difference, I once heard a professor from Wisconsin, he taught about communism. He said he wouldn't teach anyone over 30 because this type of person wouldn't this age of person wouldn't get the idea of how bad communism was out of his head, and that no matter what he said about communism or about Russia, they wouldn't accept it as good, even if it was good. And I think this is the case. I know my parents and a lot of other people that I know who are parents, they treat their kids in the way that they grew up. Like my dad had a real rough in the Depression, therefore John has it real rough now.
I think there's an opposite problem because I know a lot of parents that had a rough in the Depression really feel bad that they had a rough, so they want to make it up to their kids, but they missed out on exploiting their kids' dreams. I mean, I'm sure there's people running into problems, but I mean, there's one adult who will say that he gets what I got, but there's it seems like there's so many who want to make up for what they missed out on.
Same thing with punishment. People over 30 were in the age when their parents, you know, they do something wrong, they'll hit the kid, you know. But people under 30, it was, you know, don't touch him, he's just a little baby, you know. So, and now we've all got to learn how to, we've had to kind of learn how to discipline ourselves without our parents' help. And we've got a lot of attention yesterday. So everyone blames everything on us because we are not in control of ourselves.
The worst thing for a parent to do is to spoil their child because it makes it so hard for the kid to come into the world and instead to
take part. Let me ask another question. Why do you dance so stupidly today?
Why do you think it's stupid?
That was obviously designed to create a reaction that's causing argument.
Good point.
It was a serious question. Let me put it more seriously. My wife and I chaperoned dances, and we were amazed. We want to dance, and we look at everybody else, and they're not doing what we call dancing. They're not even touching one another. No, the question is, I think is serious. Well, the question is serious. It is, I think, pretty obvious. Someone compares dancing styles today with dancing styles 15, 20 years ago, that something has changed. Kids now will dance, and I don't know, I don't understand what's the kick in this kind of thing.
I've seen your generation relive their memories of the Wendy and the Charlestons and the another, you know, today I think kids are more inclined to engage in, you know, serious conversation about topics that are, you know, that are worrying them. Instead of swallowing goldfish, cramming telephone booths, you know, let's get 50 guys in a telephone booth, you know.
They still do that, though.
But today the press coverage of students that are serious about things like political science and their government policy. Instead of getting all this ink about, well, there was a guy from Brown University on the corner and he had sick goldfish and he put him down.
Why should the press cover that?
What?
Why should the press cover that?
I have no idea why they would cover goldfish either.
Well, no. Well, do they cover it?
They did.
Well, who? I mean, Northfield Daily?
No. I didn't grow up in that corner. I grew up 15 miles from New York, so, you know, don't give me any grief about that little bird.
Well, I want to go back to dancing. I suspect that it reflects something that people today are quite happy dancing without touching one another. With whom are you dancing when you're not touching them? What are you getting out of it?
Well,
you want to answer? Why don't you answer? Hey.
Okay. No. Wait. Okay. When I dance, it's to move. I mean, dancing to me is moving to the music. It's not touching anyone. I don't think dancing has anything to do with touching someone. It's moving to the music. And dancing when you're touching someone's all right because you're moving to the music with someone in coordination. It's also okay to move to the music alone.
When you're alone, I mean, when you're not touching somebody, I mean, you have in the sense of being on your own and you can create what you want to create. I mean, not just dancing to be close to someone or something like that. I mean, I feel like, you know, I want to move on my own and that you're on your own. You don't have to be with somebody. I mean, being with someone's fine too. But, I mean, you go to, like, some kids still dance like, well, you know, you see. But it's just that you get more, I don't know, I get more pleasure out of dancing.
But when the music dies, yeah, I probably expect to hang out with.
Yeah, the music has changed.
I mean, it kind of limits what you can. When the music is loud and going so fast.
They had some pretty hairy dances 20 years ago. with really fast music. I don't know if you've ever seen any of these done by adults or, you know, movie or something, but they're outlandish.
I think when the music goes slow again, I think then you have a couple of things.
What?
They have lots of large, real fast songs that are loud. As soon as they got a soft song, you know, they're quiet. And then you got the couple of things back.
Well, I'm not really trying to. We dance smart. Frankly, I hate the first part. I much more enjoy this kind of thing. I can't do it. But you said you gave the impression that you could enjoy dancing all by yourself.
Yeah. Well, maybe not just dancing like the fast music, but there's different kinds of dancing, like contemporary and stuff. Well, it's a feeling inside of you. It can give you a great satisfaction when you feel like you're creating it. And
when you're doing it, do you feel like you're related to anybody else?
No, I don't.
No,
it's
not. Yeah, those are people dance the same when you're dancing with someone else.
Another thing is, it's so difficult to be good at it. It's really something to work on.
Yeah, it is. It's like, yeah, you work on it.
Well, one thought, there's another question related to that about music. This is something where there seems to be a real generation gap. The music that is on, well, the music that you hear played at dances today sounds to someone with my untrained ear all the same. Is it?
Speaking just for myself, I can, all the music of, classical music and music that was popular, you know, 20 years ago, I can very easily distinguish between different songs.
I don't think you can say that. We've got the Mel Brown song. We've got a their first scans, or whatever you want to call it. They got an interval, and they do the second scans, and they're done. You know, A, B, A one, finish. Or A, and they repeat the A again, and go to a B part, and you come back to the A.
What are you getting at?
Yeah. Well, that's the way the songs are set up. I mean, you know, the way they're set up, I mean, they're the same length. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all, you can't compare classical music to more pop, you know, or more rock.
Yeah, but everything, all the different types of music have a similar beat. I mean, like, okay, rock music has its own sound, and someone who doesn't know the songs, they'll all sound alike. But country western music, if you don't know the songs, they all sound alike. Classical music, if you haven't learned the songs, they all sound alike. It's the same. Any type of music.
I don't think it would include rock music. It's only come from the last, you know, 15, 25 years, maybe, at the most. When you got classical music, then you have, you know, composers going over 400 years. You can't say it sounds.
But it does, even I'm trained here.
Well, maybe the music all sounds alike, but if you listen to some of the songs now, if you listen to just the music, if the only reason you have is the music, but if you listen to the words a lot of the songs, not, granted, some of them are just worthless as far as the words go, they're just nothing, but lots of the songs that they have now, they've really got, if you just listen to them, they're all different. Just the words and the meaning that they're trying to get across in the song makes the whole song different.
What's soul music? Robert, what's soul music? Are any groups around that claim to play soul music that don't? And so that somebody who doesn't know what it is can distinguish soul music.
It's just like any other kind of music, but it just got a little bit more soul.
Any popular song,
can it be, you know,
any one that's right now, can that be, any one of these songs be soul song?
Mm-hmm. I don't think so, because, I mean, I consider soul music coming out from, like, Four Tops and these guys, the Temptations, but I don't consider something like Yummy Yummy to be soul. I don't consider something like that to be soul. To me, it's just a sound, and that's all. It's just another, I mean, I just put it in another category. I mean, there's the, I don't put it like in rock and then soul. I put it in surfing music.
Do you have a couple of examples?
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's really rhythm and blues, not soul. I mean, it's kind of a separate thing. Because I think
to me, rhythm and blues is, you know, the one. It's, you know, you can call it blue music to you, so. But the one with the real beat is rhythm and blues.
Yeah. Well, straight from the mouth of the Playboy advisor. I don't read Playboy. but they do distinguish two different kinds. They say there is the rhythm and blues soul, then there's the so-called individual soul, where each person can relate to a singer and say, oh, soul. You know? But I mean, somebody else might not think that soul, but there are singers that, you know, that copy and this kind of stuff, where you would call it soul for all. I think it most of all, I think it would be the rhythm and blues coming from the soul.
Can soul have words to it, or is it just strictly a melody or something?
No words.
Why did some of you get so angry? Why did you get so angry? Do you think I was being a phony?
Yeah, exactly.
Or what was being phony about? Pick on me. What was that phony? Why am I phony?
Well, you could have, you know, made a bigger effort to try and at least sound like you're real. You know, I mean, there are certain pet questions that teeny boppers or that adults, you know, are supposed to ask teeny boppers to get their ideas so at the cocktail party they can tell their friends, well, I was talking to this kid down the street, it's a real groovy guy, and, you know, he tells me that this is why they dance like this, and, you know, I mean.
You wanted me to make a bigger effort to be phony?
No, a greater effort to be unfolded. I just, that issue didn't seem to be really that vital either. I mean, like, if you'd asked us what's the real in the town, you know, Vietnam is immoral or moral, or why we have to defend our interests there, but, I mean, how great a bearing on the nation, on our lives, does the difference between how we dance and how you dance, you know, affect us, really?
You just thought it was a stupid question.
Yeah, it's very true.
I don't think if you want to ask that question, you can ask it. I mean, you're asking a question. It doesn't matter what you ask. But you said, why is your dancing stupid without telling us why you think it's stupid? I mean, you know, you assume that it's stupid right away, just like that, without giving us a chance to explain.
Well, I do. I don't think it's stupid. I still haven't thought.
Yeah, well, that's why I think you got the wrong spirit.
People used to, I still haven't thought about it. I don't know, maybe you can't explain it to me, but why so many of you are so content to dance by yourself. In my generation, people had to be dancing.
Well, you know, a lot of it is that, me for one, when I first started dancing, it was apart. So I've never known fast dancing together. So you don't start doing it when you've never known it, when you've grown up without it. And most of us have grown up without it, so we just have kept it that way. But it'll probably go back to dancing sometime. It changes.
The only fast dance I've ever seen, this is a few years ago, was just, you know, too suggestive. I mean, you know, it was a fast dance, but everybody was clinging on everybody. It was horrendous. It's called the grind.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Anybody ever see the grind?
Yeah.
That's good. You know, any chaperones at a dance where the grind was going, they'd be inclined to, you know, run in and say, you know, go outside if you're going to grind.
Marshall McLuhan comments on the fact that the word cool used to mean detached and disinterested in the sense of impartial. You mean cool, calm, and collected. But today the word cool seems to mean almost the opposite of that. The way you use it, or the way young people today use it, seems to mean, what do you mean when you say somebody's cool or something is cool?
Oh, right now I think that word is so overused that you can't even tell. It means anything you want it to mean.
We usually don't say it's cool.
It's this sort of a dumb word. No, if you say it's cool, you like it. And that cool can mean such a wide variety of things, but you wouldn't say it's cool unless you like it in any sort of way.
It's sort of like, it's something that when you don't have anything else to say, it seems that everybody says, boy, that's cool.
Yeah, just how you like it.
Does that mean anything?
No.
If the word doesn't mean anything, then, or else,
I still use it. I wouldn't have a couple of years ago, it seemed to be kind of a new word, but now it, to me, actually really a part of my vocabulary, because now I, very often I'll say something like, he's kind of a cool guy or something, but to me, using cool a couple of years ago would be like using groovy now. I mean, sometimes I'll say that just to be kind of bebopper, but otherwise, I mean, I don't consider groovy to be part of my vocabulary now. Maybe a couple of years it will, but it just kind of sinks in, it's just another word, you know? I have it going around calling people groovy or something, you know? But cool still is part of my vocabulary. I've been with a lot of kids. Things like that, cool and neat. And, you know, you would, yeah, tough. You asked, that's what we meant by cool. And you'd ask me to buy it and explain that. I would have had these more words that have kind of changed. Like neat, I mean, every time I tried it, when other people would ask what cool means. So I start off with saying, well, kind of neat. So they say, what do you mean neat? I thought that meant clean or something. So it's hard to explain, so I'd rather just stay off that.
Bob Hope, I think it is.
We can't hear you.
Bob Hope and somebody else did a show with one of the comedies from the 50s or something. and through the whole show, I sat there and cracked up because they kept calling everything groovy, and they called all these girls all these words that we thought we created.
Yeah, I actually don't think groovy is such a new word. It just seems that now it's kind of used a little bit differently. But I just saw Bob one, I don't know, wrote a video or something like a couple of weeks ago. They went something like, you're in the groove, Jack. And so it's not such a new word, but like I said, someone used it, even though it's been around for 15 years, it seems to have changed its meaning before. But it kind of came out with it, so.
How many of you were here? How many of you saw any of the CFO activity? what did you think of what they were?
The very first impression I had, because all I heard about Holden was just like a super church camp. I mean, like, we've got Leather Park, I don't know how many people know that, but as a church camp, this just seems to be a little bit more, because it's farther away and it's more out in the wilderness. And I figured it was church camp, or high school kids coming up. But before I even heard about the CFO being up here, I walked off the bus, and a couple ladies sitting there together. So I said to a couple of people, I felt like getting right back on the bus. Or running down the road, but it struck me. And then I did ask for an explanation of it from Carol Dinerly. And I didn't really understand his explanation. before you said it, I just didn't quite catch it, but Johan explained it to me, then it kind
of made sense. we got in Saturday afternoon, and so we went to the second lunch where these people were, and they were talking about something going out for a clock, and we were all excited. So we went, a group of us, and they were having a religious meeting, and they were very excited about how they received the Spirit Wednesday night. And they were very, very excited. And to me, they seemed sincere. They were all loved each other so much. And they received the Spirit Wednesday night. It was very, very specific. And they just kept going on. Well, it disturbed me. And things like this disturb me when I don't understand it, or when I, when I don't understand it, when I don't know anything about it. Disturbed me, and it kind of frightened me. So I didn't figure I should make any hasty judgment until I learned more about them and the religion. But it did bother me. And I also was under the impression it was, more for people like me, like I'm looking at. I was confused that this type of person or group was here. I didn't know, what kind of people came here.
I was very confused. Well, when I went to that meeting, and we walked in there, a bunch of us said, well, let's go and stop right now. And so we go up to the second row, and
all these people, you know, are really friendly, you know, and stuff. And when they first got up there and did this, I think they did this little dance and song deal, and I was really embarrassed. I wasn't embarrassed for myself, but I was embarrassed for them because I thought, well, oh my gosh, they're all making fools of themselves. And so then they all gave these little speeches, you know, about what Holy Village meant to them. I thought, and then they all said, you know, I'm so glad that, you know, we got the spirit Wednesday night, you know, like, back, here's the spirit, you know. So then I had heard that they had stayed out all night and prayed.
It wasn't all night.
Well, I don't know how long it was, but how long it took them. And then the song they sing, you know, like, attracting you know or hug your friends. Well, I wasn't about ready to hug Becky or something.
Hey.
But it was really, it was different. And I talked with the pastor and his wife about it. And it's a different way of feeling. I mean, they see a need for it and it does something good for them, maybe it's fine. But it's just that not many of us believe in it. So then I think that that's how we're going to get that.
Joanne, basically, we do our part of the, you know, ideas and
yeah, we don't go to
no, we don't, but our part of our own philosophy and religion is loving your brother, you know. It's just a big little, you know, physical demonstration of this sort of religion.
You know, I thought it was really sort of neat because when they really liked each other, they showed up. I mean, I didn't think that they should go to such extremes as hugging each other and everything, but they just have a look in each other's eyes, like, you know, I really like you, and I just accept you for what you are. And it seems like most of the people nowadays, they're just sort of, you know, they're sort of cool to each other. It would just be so neat if you could go to church and just really show that you really like each other, you know? I don't think that you have to go out and preach, oh, I couldn't stand it when the men were kissing each other. You know, you just sort of say hi and smile. It's just sort of talking, you know?
People that are saying they love you, and I didn't take it all that serious, but I really thought that these people are really nice people. Mm-hmm. So I went to church service that night, and I noticed the preacher, and I'll be truthful that I do believe in speaking in tongues, that is my religion. And these people had that belief also, I guess. So I went out there to pray after the service was over, and I noticed that all of a sudden I felt hands on me. And I thought, what's going on here? And I noticed that this one lady, now remember I said I believe in speaking in tongues, she told me, she came along and she said, well, she was speaking in tongues. And then she stopped speaking English and she'd go on again. And then she tells me, can you do that? Like we were talking about a pony. Now see, we believe in speaking in tongues, but we don't believe in, you know, ponies speaking in tongues, you know. That what I believe that when the spirit comes and hits me, then I will speak in tongues. If the spirit won't come and hit me, then I won't speak it. If I didn't speak it, she sure was speaking it. She kept right on, and it seemed like she was interpreting what she was saying. But I got kind of scared. Like I feel kind of, what's going on, you know? I really got kind of scared when I saw it. And I also saw him go to church service the next day. I was just really shocked to see what was going on.
Don't you think that a lot of this stuff, because they do it so much, you know, they carry on so much at each of their church services, don't you think that a lot of this is put on, that they're just used to this, and so after every church service, you know, they get all wild and everything? It just doesn't seem, you know, that this can happen, you know, everybody can be this frantic all the time, that some of it has got to be put on.
Yeah, but don't you think that when they all got together up here, I don't think that those people go home. Maybe some of them do, but I don't think that most of them go home and walking down the street, walk up and hug anybody they want to. It was just here. You know, when they were all together, it was sort of, I don't know how to say what I mean, but
that's right.
It's true, they were just sort of taking it to more of an extreme here than they would have, say when they all got back to, well, they all live in different places when they all got back.
And another thing, every single one of them that got up here and spoke, you know, like CSI was at CFO camp, you know, that summer. It seems like it's a yearly thing. Every, you know, one week out of the summer they go to the CFO camp, and then it's everything, you know, they get all inspired by the spirit and love, and then they just go home and, oh, I don't know if it's true, but, you know, and then maybe it just isn't that great.
Well, it
gave me the impression that this is what's happening, because, you know, like somebody would go up there and say, well, I was at the CFO camp last summer, and it was great, you know, and now I'm so glad that I got to come again.
One of them, when they spoke, said that it would be hard when she got back to get used not to doing this stuff.
Yeah.
She got up and said that. And another thing that we noticed when they were talking, I don't know if anybody else did, but I did, was, and I'm not saying this to knock any of them or anything, but it seemed like a lot of them were sort of, I don't know if you want to call it a misfit, that came from homes where, like, their parents didn't pay that much attention to them. They even said that, you know, and they were saying what this camp meant to them. They'd say how they found love here where they couldn't find it at home. Lots of them said that.
Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why this whole group is so turned off with the physical relationship and the touching of the body.
That's right.
Everyone here seems to be turned off with that. Like the men walking around holding hands and the women holding hands. What's wrong with that? Because the way I feel, a woman can love a woman just as much as a woman can love a man. And she should be able to express this. And our society is so hung up in the idea of sex that it has to be a male and a female relationship. And, you know, immediately if they see a woman with an arm around another woman, they think she's queer.
But love and friendship is a lot of different things. How can you meet someone for 1 week and all of a sudden you love them? You can like them, identify with them, and be friends with them, and in a sense, like them very much. But to use the word that we love you, and to go to this extreme, I mean, you can, a woman can hold hands, there's nothing wrong with that, but coming up and hugging and kissing and saying, I love you, this is something that is not, you just don't go around giving your love to everyone that's being approved.
Right.
She used to hate everybody, you know? And she went to the CFO meetings just kind of like we did. see what everything, what they did, you know, really laugh at them. And she started to believe in it. And she said that she, now she loves everybody because God, or Jesus is with everybody. God is in you. And you can't hate God, because if I hate one person, you'd be hating God. So that you love everybody, and so you love God. Because you've got the God in you, and you're loving the God that's inside of you, really, more than a physical being. It's so that it's like, well, they're just showing their love to God, because God is in us, it's not around us, it's us, it's not somebody, some statue of that we worship on, it's on a cross in front of an altar in church, or a little image we have that we're showing God up in heaven. It's us that we should be worshiping more than the God up there, because God's in us.
But you have to show this love physically, can't you just, I mean, you love another person, but can't you show this by just, you know, being kind and stuff like that? You have to, you know, kiss another person.
You can do it any way you want to.
Well, they're not demonstrative. It seems like condemning just because they're more demonstrative.
Once you feel emotion, you feel the emotion inside you, what should you, I'm not for the idea, but if you feel this emotion, I can't see why you have to say to yourself, you know, I'm I can't go in front. If a person feels so fine, then you'll act that way.
Could it be that you were saying, you were the only one who was playing you, you too were suggesting that maybe something in our society has conditioned you to want to preserve physical distance between yourself and other people. This may be. Have you ever reflected on this, that when we talk to someone, we expect them to look us in the eye. We don't like someone who looks away while he's talking to us. We call it shifting. Now why? Talking is auditory. A person doesn't have to look at you to be talking to you. You want him not only to make sounds that you can hear, but also to look at you. Why shouldn't you expect him to touch you while he's talking? McLuhan argues that, you see, McLuhan says all kinds of things about you that I'm not sure are true. So I suspect it is about some of you. McLuhan says that we have conditioned you to be visually oriented, to think that it's perfectly all right to look at other people, but to preserve always your physical distance. And the tactile sensations are out. But he says that youth wants tactile sensations. Youth wants to be involved with other people, to touch. And he talks about the world has become a village. And young people, they like to be close to people. And they resent the way in which our society has forced them to keep, to preserve some kind of physical distance. Then to this, you don't have time
left. Well, the thing is, I can't, you say, you're always talking about preserving some sort of feeling. Well, maybe I'm different, but when I'm talking to a girl that I know, I'm not preserving any feeling in me. I mean, I don't want to reach out and touch her hand or something when I'm talking to her. I have no feeling for touching her. I can talk to her and be happy.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that's the way most people are. I mean, if we weren't, I think that if there's feeling fuzziness in a lot of us so deeply, then we would go on and touch somebody. But I just don't think that many people feel that way. And maybe CFO is just a way of bringing out these feelings that may be starting in you. But, I mean, I have no desire to touch a girl when I'm talking to her. Maybe I'm odd. But it's just not the way I feel.
I don't think it's
theorizing.
I've been expressing
maybe
more than
talk louder.
Oh, come on.
Not enough. Yeah, I mean, I'm all for talking to a boy. But when it comes, we'll try to get. I'm not even a faggot when it comes to a queer. So when they gonna come up and kiss me like that, you know? Or even on the tip, I think that's all right. Query, otherwise. I'm for talking to him.
Well, look, kissing is different. What about just touching?
Like
you've all known people who they can't keep their hands off you when they talk.
Like this is all right.
Hmm?
What?
There's a theory that, I'm not saying how valid it is, but that everyone has homosexual tendencies, and I wonder if our, I don't know, I don't think I'm odd. Maybe I am, like anybody else. But I think people are inhibited from the contact that they like to feel. I don't mean in every case when you're talking about a boy you went out with or a homework assignment, but I mean in a case where you're talking to someone and you have real sympathy with them, or you're talking about a problem, or you're feeling really close. I think you might want to reach out to them, and you feel like you want to really express your affection for them, and you have to, you feel you could do it if you could hug them, you know, but yet I think everyone fears this homosexual tendency that according to a theory exists.
Well, she said when you really want to express your sympathy, you know, she said in a case like that, when you're not just everyday talking. And from what we saw, I really maybe don't have much right to judge, because I didn't see very much of, you know, they left the day after we got here. But if you're gonna, and I don't think that, I know that I haven't hesitated, when you're really, you have sympathy for another girl or somebody, you don't hesitate then to hold their hand or to well, I don't say what I want to.
I think what she's getting at is when you feel like if a girl's had a problem, she's coming to you. I mean, if it happens, you go to your best friend, and like she'll put her arm around your hand, and there's nothing wrong with it, you know, because she's trying to comfort you. But you don't, people normally don't go around just kissing somebody because they want to say, I love you. I mean, if you say, I love you, everybody would like,
then it would become more so. I know you won't agree with me.
Yeah.
If we went down the street saying I love you to everybody, what would become of the word love? Or what would become of it?
It wouldn't
have a feeling of love for everybody in the whole world. But there's a special kind of love that you reserve, you know, touching and being one, say touching and kissing and all that porn. If we went around, well.
Is that
the
problem
with love? I'm in position myself.
Why?
Because
people love a girl.
From society.
Yeah,
because those people, they have a love that they share with in their beliefs and everything, and that's what they believe. And they don't have to be phonies about that.
A lot of belief in a love for another person. And a love, emotion, love,
they're two different things. And I think your idea of physical love is in two different ideas altogether. One says that that it's like homosexual or something like that. And another says that it's just a feeling you have towards that person. It doesn't have to be homosexual or anything like that. It's just a feeling like if you have something for that person or if you just are happy or something, you share it with them.
That's right. Share about a good point, I think. Because maybe the VFO, they might have put it, thought of this, like, I'm sure all you guys, this girl, a boy, love your mother, a father. And I'm sure if you go up with yourself, I don't think your neighbors are thinking of fabulous, I mean, queer, nothing like that. But I think maybe that's the idea they got. That everybody, brothers and sisters, you know. And I'm all for that, yeah. Brother and sister, but I'm not for the thing of kissing.
Yeah. What is the word is youth?
One more word.
That means that you're together.
As far as I'm concerned, that's one more word to put in that list. Cool, groovy, neat, uptight, you know?
It doesn't mean anything.
Well, the same as all the rest of them.
Uptight, maybe.
Camp, boss, all this stuff.
Okay, well, I meant something. They can't, they're hung up, they can't do what they really want to do. They're living out lives of desperation, of frustration. They never have an opportunity to be themselves or express themselves. I'm asking whether you are less this way than your parents.
I think
you're
more this way. I don't think that, I mean, nowadays, that more people can't act like themselves because, I don't know why, but it just seems to me that everybody's kind of hiding under their mask. Maybe this goes on the phone.
Are you people your age hiding under their
mask? Yes, I think so. I know I am a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. I think people, just now they know more and they bring in more ideas than your parents did before. Like sex relations, kids now know more than their parents did, you know, years ago. And like in seventh grade, they bring it into to the schools and everything.
Well,
I think that awareness of things is the current thing right now. And more than it was in the generation ago. And this makes people more up to the situation. They can act accordingly. Or, you know, they live in a whole separate lives and have a job and live a family. This was, you know, this was their life. Now it's more.
Are you more involved, do you think, in the problems of the world, your country, the community, than your parents are?
I think everyone likes to think they are, but they're not.
I think that we're more of that kind of when our parents were young, because at least when my parents were young, they were too busy helping out the family, trying to, so that they could have something to eat, to worry about what was happening in Germany or what was happening someplace else in the world, or even what was happening in the other part of the city. They're too wrapped up in their own lives. You have time to study other things.
I think that if your parents really had to do this, that they knew what was going on more than you do, anyone who speaks and talks about it. I think the one that goes through it and is involved in the actual problems of the world knows a little bit more about it than someone who talks about and learns about it in a school.
Do you think that you can better solve the problem of race, for example, in my generation too?
I think so.
I think too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think we're more
open
minded.
A lot more open minded. Even my parents come down, but they've admitted to me. They come right out and say that in specific ways that they've changed it. And they continuously say, you haven't had enough experience with it, which is true, I suppose, in some ways, in some cases. But they, you know, they tell me that themselves, and they're just not at all open-minded about anything like that.
Do you think that the problem of racial discrimination and prejudice will disappear from this country when you're older, and your generation is?
I think there'll always be some, but I think that as time goes by, and not with our generation, but maybe the next generation, when we're seeing, when, you know, everybody's seeing each other as more equal, as we come out, that maybe someday we can. It's just that so long ago that you can't say that it's going to end in 25 years because there's always someone. I mean, we can make laws to help with segregation and that sort of thing, but we can't go around and try and change everybody's attitude about it. We can't say, we're going to make a law and now you have to love her and you have to hire, or not hire, but you have to not only hire, but respect and like this person. We can't make a law saying you have to do this. I mean, we can't go around trying to change people's attitude.
Oh, God.
there's too much influence of older people.
I think that that our generation gets a, is not as prejudiced as our parents, and that the kids that I have will be just that tiny much less prejudiced than I am. And I feel that maybe in 100 or 150 years, or maybe even less time than that, that this problem will slowly diminish. And whether it happens before that to completely quit it, I don't know, but I think that eventually, in time, there will be no prejudice, that everyone will try to get along, will get along with each other. Because just my generation is just that tiny much more less prejudiced than my parents or your parents.
I was wondering if, I mean, we haven't been around that much, and as long as I can remember, there seemed to be this problem of racial discrimination. Just for a second, if I could, I was wondering if we could ask people upstairs who have been around for a little bit longer if they've seen this problem diminish, or if they think it's blossomed even more, this problem of racial discrimination. If they think it's, I hope it's not the whole deal, but just I think for to help us, I was wondering if it has, if they think it's diminished or grown, the problem of racial discrimination. Anyone? I suppose there's, I mean, you have the over 19 group up there, and there are probably a lot that are about 20 of them. They are somebody that might be like
the 50s or more. And it's not something that's brushed under the carpet, it's right out there in front of us. That's why there's more of a problem. There was always a problem.
Does that mean it's thrown out, or it stayed the same, but it's thrown out?
Well,
well, you can tell. You can tell from the Civil War.
Well, I've seen things where it's gotten worse.
I think right now, at this moment, I think there's been a polarization between blacks and whites apart. Farther and farther apart, not closer together, even though many things are being done. There seems to be right at the moment a polarization of something.
I don't think you should separate the polarization. One side is black and one side is white. But how about one side unprejudiced, one side prejudiced? The polarization is going on like that, rather than, I don't know.
All the parents, you know, just disappeared, you know, went somewhere. Would you be prejudiced against communist high school students and things like that? Or would there be more of a togetherness, like understanding person to person?
It's in the way that
someone's
believe, and not
what they look like. I mean, you get away from those standards of conditioning from the older people.
Oh, I think so. Even in world history, I learned many things about my parents and Catherine Lee with some of it. But my parents, you say they were communists, and all of a sudden they think of Russia, the two countries are different. And I think that I could have a communist friend, but I don't think that would be my idea.
I mean, if you got, you know, to the point that you could look upon things as they are and the way they could be, and that you could change it any way you want. Without that influence, you know, coming behind you, telling you that this is wrong and this is right.
It's not even a way of government. And
what seems to be asking, you're asking, aren't you, if it weren't for the conditioning of our parents, would you be as anti-communist as you are?
Just as
Yeah.
Be something in this society.
But you don't have to be, only reason you have to be is because you are insecure without it. And I think that a person with personal security, not, I mean, I'm not putting myself, because I'm not secure or anything, but I know a lot of cases I wish I was more secure so that I could break away, and yet I'm not going to say that I can't break away because society won't let me. I'm going to say that I don't because I'm not secure enough without, what's the word, conforming.
I think you don't because of your condition.
Yeah.
I think
yeah,
you do, too.
I think you do. No, I mean, you're wearing clothes, you know, you're wearing your hair in a, you know, in a style of fashion, and then you're conforming in a lot of ways.
I agree with Jack to a certain extent, but what I was talking about is more of the extreme, and I think if we were free, then everybody would be able to speak their piece, and somebody else mentioned earlier that teachers say, I'm right, you take what I am, I'm older than you.
Yeah, but you can speak your piece.
What?
You can speak your piece. She might kick you out of class, she might bump you, but speak your piece if you've got it there.
Okay, I know, but I was saying, that's what happens when we do speak our piece. And if we were free, draft card burners would be able to say, I don't want to join the Army. And I'm saying, sure, they can burn the draft cards, but they're still not being free because they're getting punished for it. And that's not, being able to believe in what they believe.
Do you think that can be free?
If there wasn't competing, they wouldn't have to burn the draft card.
What?
If there wasn't competing.
No, that is
I'm not talking about competing.
Well, if everybody broke away from society, we'd have a mess because everybody would have their own views on everything. And for instance, if draft card burners, if they got away with it, it would be, I think it's completely wrong that they should get away with this. And I think it's better that society is forced these rules that everyone at a certain age, if they're able to, has to join the Army. And if we were free to say, no, I don't want to join the Army, there would be nobody to defend us. And the world would eventually fall apart if everybody had their own rules and their own way of
living. I know, but the question was, what do you most dislike about what you've been brought up in society, right, or something like that? I just said I wish that this wouldn't be. I didn't say that it should be the other way, all over, and that we should, strike on what we want to strike on and pounce on the government for all this. I'm just saying, I wish that it wouldn't be this way. Okay?
It would be like the little boy that takes the phone call.
I think it's funny that you think you're so free, that you think that you want for you to go out and live like a hermit. You're not going to live
with your condition. I can, though.
Not to want to live.
You don't know what.
Well, without knowing it, your condition.
You are.
I'm not doubting that I'm from a condition. I mean, I'm going to dress and I might set my hair and wash it. But, I mean, in my ideas, look, if I know that if I didn't, well, I dread because I'm not, but if I didn't want to wash my hair, but if I don't wash it, it's really uncomfortable. I wouldn't wash my hair. I was very, very, when I was in high school, I let myself really be what you're supposed to be, and I'm just sick and tired of it, so I don't know. I think I could be a hermit, except that I enjoy other people's company, but I'd be a hermit with two or three people, or one.
That's because you've grown up that way. It's not really a free choice for you, because you know what it's like to be alone. So you don't want that. So it's not really a free choice.
Yeah, but, a human being has certain basic characteristics that you just have. You can't get away from. And society caters to a lot of these. And, I mean, one characteristic of human beings, according to Christian theology, I believe it anyway, that it's true that man needs companionship. Every man may not, as one I do, but I don't. Well, see, the general thing I was getting at is that today, if we can disagree, we have the chance to disagree. We have the chance to voice our opinions, and I think. I mean, we don't have every freedom. We couldn't just all run around like a bunch of idiots because society couldn't function. But we have so much more freedom that I'm really thankful for. I think our generation has more freedom than any other.
What's the bad of society?
Nothing.
I mean, isn't society just kind of people? I mean,
yeah.
maybe it's the ideas of the people, but we're supposed to believe that all our ideas, I mean, we can have any ideas we want, but this whole room is society in a way. You know, I mean, we would society be if there weren't people, right? And so, I mean, you know, she was corrupted because she wore clothes. Well, look at Adam and Eve. She picked the apple and you know.
I didn't say she was corrupted.
Well, I mean, you said she was conforming with society. Where was society with Adam and Eve? You know, the snake or something?
No, but I think when you say society, you mean our society, not just a vague ideal of society or a new creation of society. I mean, when I say that I don't like society or like society, I mean America, just the people, just, you know, this regular way of life. I'm not saying that when we sit here like this, this is a society, and this is society in a sense, but it's not the society. Or the establishment, you know.
You know what, Judy?
You know, it's the most interesting thing that I've learned tonight, listening to you, has been how unwilling you are, all of you, to impose your own point of view in anything other than your point of view. Do you realize how many times people have said, well, this is what I believe anyway, or this is just my opinion, or this is the way I feel, or I happen to belong to the church of that, or this is Christian theology or anything, I believe it. Do you realize, did you notice how many times this was said?
The way you see it.
Everything is how you see it.
You're afraid to say that, you know. Well, everybody believes this.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but
you're not afraid to say it. You just think it's unfair to say it.
You can't tell it on other people. That's why.
Well, let's get back to society. Society, well, send the kid to school, you know, give him a college education, and then let him think. Well, in high school, they're supposed to think too, but you come and you start to think and you start giving your ideas and say, well, it's only a kid, you know, he doesn't really know anything at all. He hasn't lived, he hasn't gone out in the world. And so I think we all kind of apologize because people have told us that our ideas aren't as valid as someone who's been out in the world long.
Yeah. I think
that's what we're saying.
Well, this is only my idea because people are getting, you know. Because we're only your idea, that's all. And that's what I'm thinking for, is that we're able to have different individual ideas and that we can say to one person who we can completely disagree with, and we can sit and talk about what we disagree with. We have the freedom to do this. We don't have to all conform and say this is what we do. We can say this is what I believe and you believe.
Well, anybody
who's
can say what they think, but yeah, but there's a lot of other people, when I say things, I think, well, what do they care? And I think this is how, I mean, I maybe, this is the way I feel. I'd rather be by myself maybe and think the things that I believe in. And learn from myself than discussing with anybody else. Maybe because I think that I may be different. Maybe people won't like what I say, or this is just another thing that has to do with society.
You usually hear from groups that have a certain idea because they're strong, just like college kids. They're uniting and getting together on things that they believe in. They're broadcasting it to the world. And high school students, they're not that strong, they're not that united to express their ideas, and so you don't hear from them. They're always put down because they're not noticed that as much as college people or churches or idea in some kind of group. So there is a problem of identifying new ideas and noticing what the person says next to you and caring and listening.
Anybody upstairs want to ask them?
He knows everything that I've experienced, but I don't know much.
resulted in a thinking. It's exciting too.
Yes, the idea is so good. And it's
I wondered why you asked the last question about the infrequent qualifying before stating an opinion. That wasn't quite the thing. I wondered if you had some deeper observation.
Yeah, I do. I wondered why you noticed that. I mean, why you brought it up like that?
Why was it neutral to you?
Why is that? Because I think I'm used to people having points of view and thinking that they're right. You don't hear it. You don't.
Yeah, that's right. I've heard my parents have that too, and they say things as though they're right. They say different things than
you. But you know, they're older. There's so many ideas going around in the world today that I think that all of us, now I don't know, maybe most of us, can look and say, listen, I respect your opinion. Now, listen, this is what I think.
We say what we believe, but we're always open for someone to come up and tell us something else and then maybe reevaluate what we thought at the time. So, this is it, I was right.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's changed their minds to
it. No, but I feel that there's room for knowledge of what people really think.
When we say to give our opinion, say that this is the way I feel, we feel that we're right. But we can't go and say that everybody feels the same way and feels that they're right in their opinion. That's why we say it. Not because we don't believe we're right, but because we aren't sure that everyone else believes the same thing.
I think that as I'm speaking to myself, I experiment with ideas. And, well, it might sound like I'm kind of wishy-washy, but maybe I am because I haven't decided what all my opinions are. So for a while, I'll adopt one opinion, and I think be really strong. I think this is one complaint adults have about kids, the kind of idealistic kids. A big complaint. That's what I get out of that. And I think that kids will get at least our healthy people. I get an idea and I've been with it for a while and I try it out and I discuss it and I argue it and I debate it. And then after I'm not gonna let down wrong and try it, but then I go away and think about it and change my ideas. And, until I find an idea that really fits me, that I really believe. And that's why when I say I have a certain view, I'm not, like, just absolutely no.
You said over there that no one changed their opinions. Well, I think I have, especially on the CFO. I've gotten a better understanding of them now, and I'm not quite as, I don't criticize them quite as much. And so, actually, I was open for different ideas, and I have changed my ideas, some of my ideas.
Well, what do you think about the CFO now?
Well, I can't criticize them as much. I've got, I kind of see their viewpoint of it too, Before it was only my viewpoint, what I saw, and I saw right there, right sitting in right in front of me. But now I kind of can see it from their viewpoint too, how they kind of feel. I'm not sure exactly how they feel, but I've got a better understanding. And I realize better just how they feel.
I can give you a specific example of how I changed my idea because after seeing the CFO, I right away thought I was against their physical law. Right away, I was against it and I thought it was wrong and not normal. And then Paul mentioned something about talking to your friend, looking at them and maybe touching them. And I thought to myself, but I don't have any feeling to touch them, so why should I? But then he said that maybe this is the way we've been brought up and taught. And I changed my idea from saying that absolutely it's not normal to maybe it's not normal because this is the way we've been brought up and that's all.
I've got different ideas about
discussions like that. I don't know, most of the time I'm scared to say it, but I don't know. But I've got a really good friend. Anytime, you know, like, he really believes something, he will say, well, you know, well, I think such and such, he doesn't care. And I really wish I could be that way, but it's sort of.
A lot of times, a really name is put on, like, you know, teenager cult. This is how we are, you know, every single one of us is, you know, corrupt and has too much freedom and believes in all these way out things. And it just seems to me that a lot of times we're put down for things before we have a chance to explain them. And this is another reason why we say, well, I just.
If I can answer his question, if there was something very deep behind that observation, you know, I want to talk about it later in the week.
Well, I like hearing what was.
You want to make a comment?
I think the parents of these kids are probably about the most guilt-ridden generation there has ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And I think hearing the kids, one thing that came across to me here was that I don't think I've ever seen just an amazing whitewash of youth kids. I think apart from a few of you admitted some fears and insecurities, and as a race issue, I think kind of whitewashed yourself.
You know, funny, they were giving Breton Society a whitewash job. I cannot believe that they are satisfied with the things that are being done to them in high school and home, mm-hmm. as they found.
Do you all act the way you want to act in front of your parents?
No. Yes.
Or do you act like a spoiled child and do as you wish? You know, or do you try to behave and please them when you don't want to? Do you find that as a funny?
Well, I think I'm a little phony to my parents. I don't smoke in front of my parents.
Can't hear.
I'm a little phony in front of my parents because there's a lot of things that I believe and that I do that my parents, being from a different generation, they wouldn't accept. So I don't let them know about it.
Well,
and it's a little bit phony.
What are you supposed to do?
But it's for their own feelings.
If you're really mad at your mother, you know, and you feel like swearing and hitting her and everything like that, I mean, if you go ahead and do it,
when you get in an argument with your parents or something, and you don't start yelling or anything. The minute you say something contrary to their opinions, they say, "You're talking back to me now. Shut up. That's not, you know, you're wrong." There's nothing we can do about it. Sure, we can get grounded for the next year or so by saying everything that we really feel. But it's not going to do any good anyway because our parents were wrong as far as they're concerned. And you can talk and talk and talk and talk and they just sit there, be quiet, you know, and don't talk back to me and all this stuff.
Yes, and I think that's awful.
That's
not
what you start phony. What? And you could be phony to a person that you know that's not your parent. And you just react to their face different than you behind their back. That's another area of being phony.
A person that is very sweet to one person, and you know, and your best friend, you know, you're very nice to her, you know, and you're talking to her and everything. And the next day you're talking to another friend, but you happen to say something against, you know, the first friend, you know, the one you've been talking to. This is being phony. You're off, you know, everybody has this tendency to be just a little bit phony because you gossip or you just have something. You just, I don't know, I couldn't quite explain it, but like, I'm very old fashioned. And I like the old fashioned tendencies. And
But when I get with my friends, I try not to show it, so therefore I'm feeling a way better. I think everybody is, you know, if you're trying to attract somebody's attention by doing something you don't usually do, this is also beautiful.
You had some words here for parents. Very short. This is from the medium, this massage. You were saying something about parents or guilt-ridden? Yeah. Parents are terribly worried today. You said that too. The world is changing so fast and things are different. McLuhan suggests that maybe we parents can't do anything about it anyway, so we might as well relax. The family circle is widening. The world pool of information fathered by electric media, movies, Telstar, flight, far surpasses any possible influence mom and dad can now bring to bear. Character no longer is shaped by only two earnest, fumbling experts. Now all the world...